Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get the straight scoop on what it takes to make the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur and turn your passion into profits. And today we're starting a new series called How She Did It, interviews with people who are new to entrepreneurship and making an impact with their work. And today we are talking to Aliyah Kitwana, the founder of Little Black Buddha, and Julia Firestone, the founder of Julia Firestone Coaching. So welcome, Julia and Aliyah.
Thanks so much for having us, Deb.
Thanks for having us. I'm glad to be here.
Wonderful. So Aliyah, I'm going to start with you. Tell us about what Little Black Buddha is all about.
Yeah, so we're really about the critical transitional moments in a person's life. So think about a moment where your life changed because of that transition or inflection point and the decisions that you made because of it. And that's the moment that we focus on at Little Black Buddha. We take that moment, which may be trying and difficult at the time, and we find the possibility and potential in that moment. We use a combination of traditional and novel holistic coaching tools to accomplish this end. And right now, I'm working those tools into a software package called Pathways that we are developing. We're working on the MVP and working on getting it to market in 2021.
That's so exciting. Tell us a little bit about who Pathways is for and what the benefit is of becoming part of that platform.
Yes. So it is for the target user is an 18 to 24 year old who is a middle skill worker. So not a college degree holder. My plan is to access these users through workforce development programs. And let me see. So the benefit is largely, I'm starting at least in the Great Lakes region, or what is also known as kind of like the Rust Belt. So I'm up in Rochester, New York, and economic development is a big thing up here because of the shift in the manufacturing economy. And the middle-skilled workers who would have normally fallen into that economy maybe 20 years ago are kind of, I guess, in a way being misplaced. And so throughout the Rust Belt in the Great Lakes region, we're working to like retool this workforce, this specific part of the workforce, and help them to, you know, find a career path that works for them and earn a decent living and in turn uplift the economy in the region.
That's a beautiful mission to retool. I guess you mean reskill would be a synonym for that. Give them new skills so that they can take their skills that they used to apply to manufacturing jobs and get new skills and find new roles in different ways. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. What about you, Julia? What's the mission behind your coaching business?
Yeah, so I serve purpose-driven leaders along their leadership journeys, often folks who have been left behind, particularly women of color who are turned over for promotions, either focused in social impact, diversity, equity, and inclusion in the corporate space or within nonprofit organizations and social justice work. So I'm really committed to seeing leadership that actually reflects our world. Mm. And there is such a lack of support as well for folks working in social impact and nonprofits. It is my background. I used to work in nonprofits before I made the leap to corporate, but I'm sure we'll get into all of that later. And I experienced firsthand how little support there was around professional development and particularly making moves to leadership. So I'm really committed to helping folks who have been stuck, who have been left behind in their social impact work to make big moves towards leadership.
Mm. So, you know, we frequently hear that the mission is to move up the corporate ladder, but we don't give women or certainly a diverse population of people the skills it takes to know how to go from individual contributor to leader in an organization. So I can see how that would be super valuable to your clients. So let's talk about your life after corporate story, right? So both of you are in the early stages of just getting started. And for many people who might still be in their corporate jobs or their nonprofit jobs, they might be thinking, oh my God, I can't make this transition until I have all my shit together and all my ducks are in a row and I know exactly how it's going to work and I have absolute clarity. So I'd love to chat about the meandering road to launching your business and what that was like for you. So tell us what you were doing and then how you got to the decision that it was time to make a leap. And anyone can jump in.
Okay, I'll go. So in my former career when I was in corporate, I was a reliability engineer. I worked for a defense contractor. And as I progressed in the career and assumed more responsibilities and got, you know, for my security clearances would increase also. I got to a point where they were asking me to do something that was like incongruent with my own moral compass and, you know, just what I wanted to put out into the world. And so that kind of set off, I guess it was an existential crisis for me. You know, up until that point, I had been, you know, the Black woman who was also an engineer, the only Black woman in the room usually, right? That was typically my thing. And so once that kind of, it wasn't snatched away from me, but I just didn't want it anymore, right? So it took several years to kind of to figure out what I wanted to do next. I initially went and got, it was a project management certification because I thought I could just like shift roles and, you know, maintain that nice salary, the golden bracelets and all that. And then I got to a point where I just realized I would be so miserable, you know, if I just like stayed in any role in corporate at that point. I just didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to be in a cube anymore. And I had always wanted to start my own business. And I don't know, like I just got to a point where I was like, I don't want to die thinking that, like I always wanted to do this thing and never tried it and never went for it. And so from there, when I realized that I just really didn't want to be in corporate anymore, that's when I started building Little Black Buddha.
And so you actually started building it while you were in corporate and realizing that you were at this point of no return where you couldn't really stay where you were?
Yeah. Yeah. I started while I was working full time.
And what was the catalyst for you actually making the leap and leaving that corporate job behind? Because it is, it's such a rare thing to see. Number one, a woman in engineering and then a Black woman in engineering. But when you get to a place, I guess, that, you know, you have those golden handcuffs, you have that paycheck, but it's no longer congruent with who you see you are or what your values are, then, you know, for many of our listeners, they may be in the same place too, where they're in this place of collecting a paycheck, but no longer in a place of being aligned to their values. So how did you decide that it was time to go?
I knew, I kept talking about it. I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to leave. I did two things. There were two things that I did that were significant. One was, and this is going to sound so weird. I don't know if it'll sound weird to your audience or not, but I did a yoga teacher training that lasted about 5 months. And in going through a yoga teacher training, everybody thinks yoga is all about the poses and the asanas, but there's so much more to it. And it required me to, you know, like to look into the mirror every day and see, you know, the great aspects of Leah and the less savory aspects. And really, it demanded that not only you're in alignment on the mat, but you're in alignment off the mat as well. And so I took a lot of those teachings and started to, I didn't realize it at the time, but I really started working those into the way I live. I got a life coach too. And I totally advise getting a life coach if you're stuck, because they will make you move. I mean, as long as you get the right one, you always have to get a coach who you work really well with. And this one, she was nice, but she definitely held me to it, basically. And so I had those two things going on, and my family decided to take a 2-week vacation to California. And I was sitting on the beach and looking out on the ocean. And I realized that life was way too short, and I quit. I quit from Cali. I wasn't even at work. I just emailed them and said, you know, this is my 2 weeks. when I get back, I will pack up my stuff and leave. But I just can't do this anymore. So I think it required a lot of introspection and just also just removing myself from my normal mode of operation, that I think that helped a lot too.
You know, it's so amazing to hear really similar stories. You know, we've talked before, and my path was something similar as well, where you hit a wall where things just aren't working, no matter how hard you try, no matter how tightly you hold on to that corporate paycheck or the comfort of the discomfort of going to a regular gig every day. And then there comes that pivotal moment, that moment of truth, I guess is a good way to put it, a moment of truth, when you come to the truth of who you are and the truth of the current situation that you're in, and you can no longer deny the truth. So that's a powerful story. And I love that you sent an email, because once you get that, right, it's like, what am I waiting for?
Right.
I have to, you know, I have to act on it. Mine was the same thing. I got my vision on a cushion at a silent meditation retreat. I came back to the office and made an appointment with the VP of HR, senior vice president of HR, and said, I'm complete, you know, because once you get your answer, what's the hesitation? Mm-hmm. So, Julia, I'm really interested to hear from you. What was your decision? How did you decide to make the leap from your job?
Yeah. So, I had transitioned from nonprofits to corporate social impact. And then, most recently, while I was still in my corporate job, to corporate innovation and global strategy. And I knew pretty quickly there was a missing piece for me around making a positive impact in the organization and in the world. But I kind of, and Leah and I had a conversation before this recording where we talked about the murkiness before you get that clarity of what's next. And so I sat in that murkiness for quite a while, you know, maybe almost as long as a year. And Deb, you and I had a conversation in September of 2019 where I wasn't clear enough yet on what that next thing was. I had already been coaching for a couple of years, and I had just finished a certification in transformational coaching, but I didn't have the picture articulated. And this sounds a little bit like tooting my own horn here, but I actually went on a retreat in Bali, led by my friend Hannah Chung, who runs Reboot Experiences. And as part of it, she invites us each to bring our own gifts to share with the other participants. And I created this workshop. I think if you know me, you know that I love future visualization and leading visualizations for other folks looking ahead. And so I created this workshop ostensibly to serve the other people in the group, where we looked ahead a year from now, imagining that we had made that big, scary choice and really felt into, you know, what is the physical sensation having made that big choice? What is my life like in its most incredible form? And then we did the same exercise again, imagining that we had not made any changes and really felt what it was like to exist in that possible reality. And I accidentally workshopped myself because I left that so incredibly clear that I was going to be miserable if I stayed. And it would be a disservice not only to myself, but to the company I was working with and to all the potential clients that I could serve. And so the day after I landed from that, you know, 40-hour flight, series of flights, I called my boss, who had also just found out someone else on our team was leaving. And I am very good friends with her. So I let her know as quickly as I could what my plan was. And shortly after, Deb, you and I spoke again, and I had so much more clarity that at least I knew I had to make that move and I had to start my own business and go all in on coaching. And while my business has taken different shapes, thanks to the Launch Lab, and gone through some different iterations, it was the best choice I've ever made. And, you know, I'm now a little over a year into that future that I imagined. And it's honestly even better than I pictured in my visualization, even though this year has been so weird.
So weird.
And
so
really
weird.
Hard.
So hard.
And really hard. Yeah, in so many ways, you know, learning that I could run my own business, not only keep it afloat, but really thrive, have the support, not only of you, Deb, but of the incredible community, folks like you, Aaliyah, to really support me and for us to support each other. It gave me all the confidence in the world to go for it. And it's even better than I could have imagined.
Well, we're going to dive into that better than I could have imagined piece. But I want to acknowledge that you workshopped yourself into your next transition. I think that's so beautiful. And the common theme here, because I love spotting patterns, is that it was a spiritual path for both of you. It was a reconnection to who you are and what you want that led to this transition. And getting through the murky pieces, right? So the murkiness of it all. And I think it's important to acknowledge the murkiness because it isn't always clear and tied up with a bow. And I guess the calling needs to be stronger than the desire for the regular paycheck, or the pain needs to be stronger than the fear of what could be. And so I'm super interested to hear more from you, Julia, about how is it better? How is it better than you imagined? That sounds so intriguing.
Yeah. You know, of course, I think money fears came up originally, and they have been so low, actually, on the list of real challenges. It's been much easier to earn an income as a business owner because I'm doing things I love. And it's so much more rewarding. Each time I get paid, I know that I worked myself to get that payment. And I spend more than 6 months fighting for a 10K raise in my corporate job, and got, I don't know, it was a 6K raise for the last few months. And it was just so exhausting and unrewarding. And so, you know, thinking about where I am now, being my own boss is excellent. I love it. I love waking up in the morning and knowing that I am empowered to focus on what feels important for me and for my clients. I get to have social impact and diversity, equity, and inclusion at the core of everything I do. I don't have to fight to convince someone else that that's important because that's just who I work with. Having it's actually, I think the level of freedom can feel really scary before you do it because anything is possible. But I think I've been able to lean into that sense of possibility and wonder and really step into playing as much as I possibly can. And that's sort of been my keyword through this transition is how can I play? And so testing out different types of webinars and workshops and, you know, working with you, Deb, on that. And, you know, thinking of new types of services. I'm launching a 6-month program in January called the League of Impact Leaders, which I think we'll talk more about in a bit. But that sense of possibility has meant everything, and creating my own schedule, working with brilliant people like Aaliyah and others in the program. It's actually the sense of freedom has been really empowering rather than exhausting.
And it's a sense of control, right? So you're in charge. You're in charge of your time. You're in charge with of how you spend that time, of who you work with and what your priorities are. Now, Aaliyah, let's talk with you because when you're in a services space and you're self-funded, it's a little bit different than being in a software space where you're looking for investors. So let's talk about some of the challenges that you faced in your launch and what's worked and what continues to be a challenge. And what do you think is needed in order to make it easier for women inventors to get their products to market?
That's a difficult question to answer. I will say, so I am early on in the product creation phase whereby we are working on what is called a minimum value product right now. So the MVP, and that should be ready or complete in February. So with that said, and I am not generating any revenue from my product right now. With the development of the MVP, I can start to shop it around and bring in some pre-revenue. And in doing so, I'll be able to show traction to potential investors. I'm trying to think of what else I need to say here. So because I'm also pre-revenue, I have been relying heavily on workshopping and using a lot of the tools that are being rolled into the software as coaching offerings, really. And so I have worked one-on-one and in some group settings with professionals to workshop some of the tools and exercises that I actually am using in the software to generate income right now. Additionally, I have also been applying for not every grant that comes my way, but I do apply regularly for grant money, and that has helped to sustain the business to get to that point where I will be generating revenue next month. I mean, not next month, but next year.
And you recently won a grant, right?
Yeah.
You recently won a, what was it, $25,000 or
$30,000? Yeah, I won $25,000 grant from earlier in the year. I got that, and I've gotten, you know, just like smaller grants here and there. Most recently, it's just somebody asked me, I've been getting a lot of questions about how to raise money for their businesses. So what I do recommend highly is that you start local for grant money, because once you get onto the national stage, the competition is a lot higher. But if you go after the local grant money that is in your community, that tends to be a little more accessible. I think for the part of your question with regards to making this more accessible for women, I am lucky enough, at least right now, there are groups of women investors that who are interested in lifting up other women-owned businesses rather, that are available. So those are available to me right now.
So you're talking about the she economy and women investing in other women?
Yes.
Are these like private relationships, or are you going to like Pipeline Angels? What's been that process?
Any and all. So yes, Pipeline Angels is definitely an option that is on, that's on my radar. I've been blessed and lucky enough to have people in my networks who know other people who have, so I've gotten some introductions to some other investors as well. So it's both, you know, word of mouth. So like a warmer introduction and also like the colder access points, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a process mm-hmm. that needs to be turned on its head for women. It's just so difficult to get. And are you looking for equity investors or you mentioned grants, so right. Equity investors?
Eventually, I plan on going for the equity investment, so the pre-seed money. Mm-hmm. And I think angel investing also requires some equity, but to the furthest extent possible, I'm trying to leverage the grant, the free money that is available. Another option, I don't know if any of your listeners are interested, but there is SBIR, which I cannot remember what that stands for, but there are government grants that are funded by the different agencies to do research that you can go after as well that are, you know, really well funded. And if you're strategic about when you apply, it can go well as well.
You know, I would think that someone who is passionate about the mission of reskilling marginalized workers who have been marginalized because of progress of industry. You mm-hmm. know, we're hoping maybe with this new administration that we'll have a lot more investment in clean energy, that there's a place for these engineers and workers, manufacturing workers who with new skills could still be functioning as viable members of society and contributing to their families, mm-hmm. you know, and still earning their worth. So I think your mission is extremely important. So people who are interested in that and creating new opportunities for people whose industries have been, what's the word I'm looking for, whose industries have been reinvented, mm-hmm. Need to find new places for themselves. So I think it's an important mission.
Yeah.
So, So what has been the number one insight that you've learned along this journey? So I know that you're supplementing the investment that you're putting, the sweat equity that you're putting in the Pathways platform with doing some workshops and consulting and coaching. And that has really fueled, it seems like there's this nice synergistic relationship between the work that you're doing in real life with what you're then putting into the platform based on what you're learning of what people need. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
So when you joined the Launch Lab, you were going down both paths, right? So you said, I have this software platform that I'm developing and I'm coaching individuals who are going through career transition. Mm-hmm. Now, what was it like for you to pursue two paths, and is that your strategy going forward?
So pursuing two paths is very difficult. It's hard. It's really hard just to do one to do one business on its own. I think pursuing two paths is a lot more doable if one of those business lines are more mature. But to start them both from kind of like the infancy stage is incredibly difficult. And what I found was that I was splitting my time and my energy, and I was not doing either as well as I wanted to. And so I made the choice to like just, you know, go all in on the software because that's right now that's my baby. And so and I want to get it to market. So if I put all my energy and effort behind it, it should move forward faster and I will be able to make a bigger impact.
Yeah, looking for investors for a technology platform is a full-time job.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I think the message to the listeners is that when you first start out, it's nearly impossible to focus on to even relevant parallel paths and succeed at both of them. And I think your point is really well taken. Get something mature and working first before you launch a second thing.
Right. That's, yeah, I agree. So like once you're more mature and you have, and that's, I don't know if you want to get into the difference between like what a startup is versus like how you run a real business, but those are two very different entities and business models. And to run two startups at the same time is not fun. And so like once you get the startup from that startup phase to like operating more like a business, like a well-oiled machine, which is what, you know, that's the preferred way, then you go and do another startup, you know. that's my advice, you know, like running two startups is kind of maddening. Some people can do it. It didn't work well for me.
No, and not during COVID and not during homeschooling when you've got, you know, at least two, maybe three kids at home getting homeschooled. So, you know, it's not possible. So bravo for you for that insight and clarity that, you know, I need to just focus on one thing and do it well. Mm-hmm. So Julia, you too had a pivotal moment, we'll call it the pivot, in the Launch Lab where you thought you were going in one direction, then slightly shifted. Tell our listeners about that, because it's so common that we think we're pursuing one idea, and yet as we get into it and we do some of the market research and we get clearer on the ideal client and the value proposition, that we change our initial idea. So what was that like for you?
Yeah, it feels like a world away because I'm so far along with now taking action on that realization. But I came into the Launch Lab, yes, focused on one-on-one coaching with clients, but also planning pre-COVID to run in-person retreats. And that's definitely on hold. But I was kind of thinking about virtual retreat sort of thing. It was a little amorphous and unspecific. And the market research and doing it in community with the Launch Lab group, the cohort that was there when I was there, was the biggest inspiration, but also data-informed decision that led me to what I'm doing now. So as I had the love seat that day in the Launch Lab, I think it was late August of this year, and I started reading through my market research findings, which was research that I've shared out with everyone who I interviewed too. And there was this pattern that I hadn't quite identified yet, that between UW and the rest of the group, we noticed that these, at the time, we were looking particularly at women who are in leadership roles in nonprofits and in social impact work. And there was this real clear pattern once we started talking about it that they were feeling very isolated at the top, and they didn't have the resources, the mentorship, or the peer community that they needed in order to really step into leadership in a way that looked different from the management that they had experienced in organizations that they had been part of when they were more junior. So we realized this was a real aha moment for me, that we needed let me say it this way. There was a real need for a hybrid program accelerator, leadership accelerator, and community for social impact leaders to rapidly grow into their fullest leadership while receiving that peer support, mentorship from folks who had been on this journey before them, and, you know, really bringing in the innovation work I had done for them to use new methodologies that haven't been so common in the nonprofit and social impact fields to make a way bigger impact for beneficiaries, for clients, and the folks that they serve.
I remember that day really well when we pulled up the revenue calculator, the pricing calculator, and we plugged in some numbers and we said, wow, if you want to earn six figures and $100,000 and you were charging $5,000 for this peer community and these additional resources and education. All you would need is 20 people to break six figures. And it was this big, oh, yeah, that's all it takes. And so I think a lot of people live in fear that, oh, I'll never replace my corporate paycheck, or it's difficult. But when you do the research, and that's what, you know, I geek out on the market research all the time, because it tells you everything you need to know. And I love that you really niche down, that you have a narrow niche that you're focused on, and that you have absolute clarity in where they struggle and what they need, and that you have the skills and tools to deliver that. And that's it. That's all it takes. And then you can absolutely be in control. So bravo, Julia.
Thanks, Deb. Yeah, the research was absolutely integral to everything I'm doing now. And I mentioned earlier about the corporate paycheck and how exhausting it was to advocate for myself for a raise. And quite frankly, running my own business and being in the driver's seat, it is so much easier to make the income that I want to than it was asking someone for permission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So love your story. Love that you had your pivotal moment. Each of you had a different pivotal moment. Aaliyah, I know you're still very early stage, but what was your biggest takeaway from your experience in the Launch Lab?
Actually, and just speaking to Julia's experience and what I saw in other women's experiences throughout the Launch Lab, and what I'm seeing also in, I guess, the startup community, for lack of a better word, is that that market research is golden. Like, doing that and laying down that foundation and understanding who exactly your customer is and what the need is applicable not only in the service business industry or consulting business industry, it's applicable to any business you start. And so it's so basic and fundamental that it's applicable everywhere. Like, anytime you start something new or you have a business idea, you have to validate it. And you validate it by asking questions and finding the market and finding the need and addressing that need.
It's really just about being curious. Mm-hmm. Like, where are people struggling, and what do you wish you had? And it boggles my mind in this hype-filled world of, you know, learn this marketing strategy and these 12 steps to get you six figures, that the basic fundamentals of business just haven't changed. Be a good listener. Understand where people struggle. Be creative in developing differentiated solutions so that you get to be in control and you get to make an impact with your work. You know, no money, no mission. So you don't really get to make an impact until you can find that money-making model. And you're both on that path. You're at different stages, Julia in the services space, Aaliyah in the really services technology space. And you're doing great things. And you're both so smart, so articulate, so mission-driven that I know you're going to be huge successes. So Aaliyah, if people want to support Pathways and helping people retool their skills and become relevant in a new world economy, how can they support Pathways? What's the best path for them to take, so to speak?
Yes. So I'm running a crowdfunding campaign right now. And if any of your listeners want to know more about the software platform itself, there's a great video on the page. It's lbb.fyi/path. That's PATH. And while you're there, if you can donate, that would be awesome.
So we will put that link in show notes. Julia, how do people find out more about your work?
Yes. So from that inspirational aha moment in the Launch Lab, I am launching the League of Impact Leaders, which is a 6-month group program to level up your leadership for purpose-driven people. You can learn more about the League of Impact Leaders at juliafirestone.com/league, L-E-A-G-U-E.
Beautiful. And thank you so much for spending time with me today on Life After Corporate. I think it's so important for people who are thinking about making the leap and going through all of that murkiness and that fear of, you know, will I be homeless? Will I be living in a box under a bridge? Do I really have what it takes? And to once you have that mission, once you have been given your instructions, so to speak, that there was very little hesitation in Julia's path or Leah's path to saying, you know, it's time. I know it's my time. And the longer I stay and the longer I suffer, the more damage I'm doing to myself and the less impact I'm able to make in the mission that I have been put here to accomplish. So my sincere thanks for each of you. Thank you for your vulnerability and your sharing with our listeners here today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deb.
It's been great to have this conversation. And listeners, please reach out to Julia and Aaliyah if you're interested in the League of Impact Leaders. Reach out to Julia and to support the Little Black Buddha Initiative on Pathways. Reach out to support that crowdfunding campaign. I did. I got the t-shirt. So you'll want one too. It's a very cool t-shirt. Anyway, that's it for now, my friend, for this episode of Life After Corporate. Till next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.